Good afternoon. You are tuned to the Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, the 29th of April, the year 2015. Today we'll learn about the new production of Perseverance Theater, Seven Homeless Mammoths, One in New England. Rustin Burt and Kelly Grummet will be here from the United Way with details about their upcoming fundraising Cruise for a Cruise cause. Tonight's Juno World Affairs Council speaker, Lawrence Husick, will be here with his presentation, Cyber War and Warfare. Philip Carter will be here to highlight the Juno Dance Theater's 40th anniversary concert. And we'll talk with Avril Veliz about her first Friday show at the campus. That writer's almanac, Bird Note Music, more today on the Juno Afternoon. Weather forecast for the rest of today, showers, high temperatures around 47 degrees. Forecast for tonight, cloudy skies, scattered rain and snow showers.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Pine Ridge, South Dakota is now a promise zone. The designation by the Obama administration helps fast-track resources for things like infrastructure, law enforcement, and economic development. Oglala Lakota County on the Pine Ridge Reservation is among the poorest areas of the country. Promise zones have been granted previously to other tribal communities, and some critics point out failures in past federal programs. Yet as Charles Michael Ray reports, local leaders say this time it's different.
The Promise Zone designation is given to impoverished areas in an attempt to improve economic opportunities and quality of life. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack announced the designation for Pine Ridge.
President Obama often says that a child's zip code ought not to matter in terms of that child's ability to have opportunity to achieve the American dream by working hard and playing by the rules. But the sad reality is that in tribal areas and in rural areas of this country, zip code does matter.
In the late 1990s, President Clinton came to Pine Ridge and announced an empowerment zone with similar goals. Some local officials say that program ended short of the promises made because needed funds got tied up in red tape. Those behind the designation on Pine Ridge say this time it's different. Nick Tilson is with the Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation.
But it's not something that you're going to snap your fingers and see tomorrow. It has to be a long-term work by us here in the community in partnership with the federal government.
Tilson says the Promise Zone designation on Pine Ridge is a bottom-up approach.
So it's not so much that this initiative is going to give X amount of grants or X amount of loans. It's going to help us leverage existing grants and loan programs that are out there to collaborate together. And I have a strong belief in the work that we're doing that it's going to impact way beyond Thunder Valley. It's going to impact housing, it's going to impact infrastructure investments throughout Pine Ridge.
The Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation is the lead organization in the new Promise Zone designation. Other partners in the project include the Oglala Sioux Tribe, the Pine Ridge Chamber of Commerce, and the Lakota Fund. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Fish experts, scientists, and tribal leaders met recently to discuss plans to reintroduce salmon and steelhead to the Upper Columbia River. Steve Jackson has more.
Ever since the creation of Upper Columbia River dams, the salmon runs ended in that portion of the river. Now, some 70-plus years later, there are plans to see if those runs can be restored. The loss of the salmon has been a major shift for the Native Americans in the region. Speaking at the Lake Roosevelt Forum, John Cyrus of the Upper Columbia United Tribes said the five tribes comprising his group have suffered the most cultural loss in that time frame.
These tribes have been the first affected by all these operations when they lower and raise the water levels behind the dams, and they've also been the least mitigated over these last 80 years.
Now the Northwest Power Planning Council has put UCUT in the driver's seat of a plan to examine and implement procedures to see if salmon can be reintroduced above Grand Coulee Dam. New technologies include a floating surface collector and a gizmo called Whoosh that may be revolutionary in picking up tiny fish known as smolts and allowing them to get safely past the dams on their way downstream. Current plans call for a feasibility study to be undertaken in the next couple of years to determine if current technology can be successful in the reintroduction. Before completion of the Upper Columbia dams, some 600,000 salmon and steelhead were harvested each year in the upper portion of the river. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by NativeGiving.org, empowering Native children and families through community giving.
All the donations made on NativeGiving.org go toward the organization you choose.
Information on successful innovations at NativeGiving.org.
Science, technology, engineering, and math students thrive at New Mexico Tech. Personalized instruction, rigorous curricula, undergrad research opportunities. New Mexico Tech, where the smart kids go. Info in Winds of Change magazine or visit nmt.edu. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon here on listener-supported radio. Our first guests are here to talk about seven homeless mammoths, why wander New England. Thank you for coming down the station, Tom Robino and Rebecca George.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks for having us.
So that's a...
It's a mouthful.
That's right. Seven Homeless Mammoths.
Yes.
It's the newest production by Perseverance Theater, and it opens up when?
It opens this Friday, actually, May 1st, and it goes through the 24th. And that's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 and 4 o'clock on Sundays.
Can you give me an idea of the plot, please?
Yeah, so it's basically about a dean of a small liberal arts college in the Northeast in Massachusetts. And she's forced by the Board of Trustees to shut down the Natural History Museum on campus, something that she does not want to do. Meanwhile, she's moving her ex-lover, Greer, into her home, and at the same time, she has her new, much younger girlfriend at home. So the comedy of manners kind of ensue when the three are forced to live together, and also the pressures from the small town politics about this small museum that people have basically forgotten about until all of a sudden they're going to shut it down. Now all of a sudden everybody in this small town cares about it.
Rebecca George, you're here from the Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater.
Yes, I've worked with them off and on for years, and now this is my first show with Perseverance. I'm very excited to be here.
What role do you play?
I play Dean Reen. She's the dean of the college that Tom was just speaking about. And she is dealing with a lot. She's a great character. There's a lot going on in her personal life. As Tom mentioned, her ex-lover is moving back into the house because she's having a recurrence of cancer. And so she's moving back into the house where my character's younger lover also lives. So there's kind of a three ladies all living together in this house, trying to figure out a new way for them to have a relationship. So one of the themes is kind of alternative kinship structures in the play, and that's what we explore. And then also, you know, her work life is in an uproar. They're closing down this museum, and the town is going crazy and blaming her for it. And that's where the seven mammoths live. So in this small museum, there's seven woolly mammoth skeletons that they are trying to figure out what to do with.
And it's a comedy.
Yes, and it's funny.
Where do the laughs come from?
There are just all different kinds of comedy in this play. It's really rich and layered. There's very lowbrow comedy, very highbrow comedy. There's a lot of witty dialogue. But then there's also the dioramas in the Natural History Museum actually speak. They kind of are the voices of the college students. So you get to hear the different college students that have been through this museum throughout the past 20 so years. And their bits are hysterical. And that's kind of the lowbrow comedy. Yeah, it's just listening to a bunch of college kids when they think no one else is around. So that's really funny. And then there's a caretaker character, and he is kind of the voice of the town. So he reads all of the letters to the editor and the newspaper articles about this closing of the museum. And so you get to hear all the quirky, crazy inhabitants of the town and how they feel about what's going on.
People from Juneau will really find that pretty funny, because a lot of the letters to the editor and town board meeting minutes and all that it's very similar to stuff that happens in this town as well.
It's a comedy. How do you direct and how do you act in a comedy when one of the most vital elements is missing, the audience?
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing is to serve the playwright, serve what the text is, and that is, especially in this play, is finding the rhythms. So Madeline George, who is the playwright of this, talks about it as her version of a Shakespeare comedy meets a sitcom. And so you have these sitcom-type rhythms within the play, and that's one thing to find. Where's the joke and within this conversation? And how does the text build up to that joke? And then where does it go from there? What's the next section? So it's kind of finding it section by section. And then it's also staying on top of it, so being right there with the language, not thinking behind or thinking forward, but being really in the moment and keeping yourself vulnerable on stage, and staying ahead of the audience. If the audience begins to pick out what's about to happen, it no longer becomes funny. So pacing's a big deal as well. And then the previews, which is great, which we have a preview tonight at 7:30 and tomorrow night at 7:30. Previews are great for comedies because it really the actors get used to where the laughs are coming. In a play like this, it's interesting. We've already had one preview, and the laughs were coming from all over. So there's different people find different things funny. Well, there's a little bit for everyone in this, so it's really kind of scattered laughter throughout the play we found on Sunday.
Is it family friendly?
No. yeah, it's an adult comedy. It's, I'd say, 15, 16 up. It's got strong language, and it has some sexual situations that some people younger than that might be a little uncomfortable. Definitely if I was a parent with my 12-year-old, I'd feel uncomfortable with that. So
yeah,
it's more for mature audiences.
The subtitle is an academic sex comedy. So that gives you a little clue about the range there for audience members.
How many people and who's in the cast?
There's six people in the cast, two UAS students, one a Junoite local, Mike Peterson. We have Katie Jensen, who is one of the actors who runs Theater in the Rough. We have an actress from out of town, from L.A., Sylvia Kwan. People probably know her if they saw Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike last year. She played Nina. And then Rebecca. So it's a small cast, six people.
What's the run of the show?
The run of the show starts May 1st. It goes to the 24th. It's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30. Sundays at 4 o'clock. We have a preview tonight at 7:30, and we have a preview tomorrow night at 7:30. Normally, we don't have previews on Thursdays, but it's in pretty good shape, so we're going to go ahead and make Thursday a preview.
How's your work in Shakespeare compared to this?
It's surprisingly similar. I'm very thankful for my classical training because the way Madeline George writes, she's just so talented, and it's really layered language. And my character in particular has several large speeches and rants, and they're very Shakespearean to me. So to be able to handle that language is challenging, and they're similar in that way.
Are you used to acting in comedies?
I have acted in, most of my acting training has been in, classics and Shakespeare. And so I've done some Shakespearean comedies. Contemporary plays are few and far between for me. So this has been a real treat.
All right. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
It's just you can get tickets by calling 463-TIXS or go to our website at ptalaska.org. Also, both Hearthside Books locations and the Jack has more information about the show and tickets.
And previews are tonight.
Previews tonight at 7:30 and tomorrow at 7:30. And then we have pay-as-you-can previews performances the Sunday and Thursday.
Oh, and Madeline George will be here.
Yeah, Madeline George, the playwright of the play from New York City, will be here for Friday opening night, and she'll do a talk pack after the Saturday performance and a brown bag lunch talk at the Juno Public Library downtown from 12 to 1:30.
All right, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
The Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 29th of April, 2015. It's the birthday of William Randolph Hearst, San Francisco, 1863. His father acquired the San Francisco Examiner as payment for a gambling debt, and his son took it over at the age of 23 and became famous for sensationalism, or as it was called, yellow journalism. One of his writers said a Hearst newspaper is like a screaming woman running down the street with her throat cut. In 1898, Hearst sent the artist Frederick Remington to Cuba to cover the war, and Remington wrote home, "There is no war, request to be recalled," and he was told, "You furnish the pictures, I'll furnish the war," and the Hearst newspapers did their best to promulgate what came to be called the Spanish-American War. It's the birthday of Duke Ellington, Washington, D.C., 1899, took piano lessons as a boy, but it wasn't until he heard ragtime and stride piano that he got interested in music. Duke Ellington said, "I never had much interest in the piano until I realized that every time I played, a girl would sit on the piano bench to my left and another to my right." And it's the birthday of the poet C.P. Kavafi, born in Alexandria, Egypt, 1863. Lived in Alexandria almost his entire life, in an apartment just above a brothel, across the street from a church and a hospital. It's the birthday of the editor Robert Gottlieb, born New York City, 1931. In 1957, he was a young editor at Simon & Schuster when the company was in turmoil, nobody seemed to be in charge. And he received a manuscript for a book called Catch 18 by Joseph Heller. Gottlieb thought it was brilliant, and he and Heller went to work on the book. Gottlieb taped pieces of the manuscript and Heller's handwritten notes all over his office walls and desk, rearranging passages of it. One day he heard that the novelist Leon Uris was about to publish a book called Mila 18, and that's how Catch 18 became Catch 22. Came out in 1961, sold more than 1 million copies. Robert Gottlieb, who said, "I have fixed more sentences than most people have read in their lives." Here's a poem by Philip Schultz, "What I Like and Don't Like." "I like to say hello and goodbye. I like to hug but not shake hands. I prefer to wave or nod. I enjoy the company of strangers pushed together in elevators or subways. I like talking to cab drivers, but not receptionists. I like not knowing what to say. I like talking to people I know but care nothing about. I like inviting anyone anywhere. I like hearing my opinions tumble out of my mouth like toddlers tied together while crossing the street, trusting they won't be squashed by fate. I like greeting card cliches, but not dressing up or down. I like being appropriate, but not all the time. I could continue with more examples, but I'd rather give too few than too many. The thought of no one listening anymore, I like that least of all." "What I Like and Don't Like" by Philip Schultz, from his collection entitled Failure, published by Harcourt and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, throughout the month of April, their Favorite Poem Project Florida invites Floridians to submit their favorite poem. Florida-based listeners can submit their nominations at poetryfoundation.org/favoritepoemflorida. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to listener-supported radio here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests, Rustin Byrne and Kelly Grumman, members of the board of directors from the United Way in Southeast Alaska, here to talk about United Way's Cruise for a Cause on Tuesday, May 5th. Rustin and Kelly, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for
Jeff.
Us.
Appreciate you having us.
So if people are familiar with the United Way, could you educate us, please?
Well, okay. So if they aren't familiar, we've been doing a poor job getting the word out, but United Way, it's United Way of Southeast Alaska, and we handle this whole southeast region from Yakutat down to Ketchikan. And what we do is basically partner with other agencies. We have 33 partner agencies, nonprofits, that do all kinds of different things, Cancer Connection, SAIL, REACH, what's some others, AWARE, I mean, just lots and lots of different nonprofit agencies. And what we do is try to help raise funds to help out these real issues that are important to our community members and help that they need to be able to accomplish their categories. Jessica will be users of partner agencies or our services through the partner agencies. So probably somebody you know or somebody most people know have used one of our partner agencies at some time or another. So it's about 30% of the population.
Why did you agree to serve on the board?
Well, I like the mission. I like doing things to help people. And I thought the United Way was interesting in that we don't have one particular cause. We're working in a lot of areas to try and help in a lot of ways. And because of that, we're able to keep costs low, administrative costs low, and we're able to direct those back to these partner agencies so that they can keep their fundraising costs low as well.
Kelly, how about you?
Well, I think it was a great way to, it's a great way to be charitable where you can really appeal to anyone who wants to be generous because they can, whatever it is that they feel passionate about, where they think help is needed, they can choose to designate their donation funds to that agency, and then United Way will act as basically a coordinator to get those funds to that particular charity so that those individuals can be helped in the way that that donor feels passionate about. So that's why I really like to be involved with United Way, because it just helps everyone who wants to be generous facilitate, that effort.
And you're here today to talk about the cruise on Tuesday.
We are. So we're having a very fun event. It's May 5th on Tuesday, and Alan Marine was very generous to donate a cruise for us as well as a salmon bake meal over at their remote lodge, Orca Point Lodge. And so there's going to be 100 of us on a boat, and we're going to cruise out to the lodge with Martin Boozer, who's 4-time Iditarod champion. And he's going to do an exciting presentation. I haven't actually heard him speak, but I understand that he's pretty motivating and entertaining. So people will have a chance to interact with Martin Boozer on the way out, on the way back while we're there, and enjoy his presentation. We're also going to have a silent auction on the boat, and there's some great things that have been donated by some generous companies. We've got a African safari, actually, which is super cool. I actually purchased this item at a different auction and just got back from it. It was really the trip of a lifetime. And so somebody might get a great deal on that one. But Wings of Alaska donated Taku Lodge experience. We have donations from Holland America Princess AJ Mine. We've got Glacier Gardens, Alaska Travel Adventures donated some kayaking experiences, Mendenhall rafting, people can bid on Mount Roberts tram passes, helicopter tours donated by Temsco, Era Helicopters donated Taku Glacier Landing, Cycle Alaska actually donated a bicycle, so that could be a fun one for someone to bid on. But there's going to be a lot of things that people can bid for the silent auction. And then what else is going on? We have a door prize, which is super cool. It's a really great Alaska Travel Adventures and AML donated part of this. And also the doctor.
Dr. Eugene Huang at Southeast Radiation Oncology Center actually helped donate that.
Made a great donation in getting this kayak, but it's a Lukshati Tandem sea kayak, and it's worth $2,300. And so anyone who donates $100 will have the chance to go on this event, and they'll also be put in the drawing for the chance to win this kayak. So, we don't have very many tickets left, but so if you are interested in this event at all, it'd be a good idea to get on the website and register and buy some tickets. We would also really appreciate your donation in doing so.
And what's the website?
It's the United Way, SEAK.org. That stands for SoutheastAlaska.org. So United Way, SoutheastAlaska.org is what you would Google if you wanted to Google it, but United Way, SEAK.org. So you go on there and you can register. You can pay for it right there. Like she said, we're running out. We know we have 100 seats available that we're trying to sell. We may open it up for a little bit more, but we don't know for sure that we will. As of this morning, 70 of those seats were sold, and we know that there's others that have told us they're going to buy, and they haven't bought them yet. So,
well, they better soon.
See, yeah. Yeah, better soon. If you don't get on them in the next couple of days, they're probably going to be gone.
All right, Rustin Byrne and Kelly Grummet, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Just again, want to say thanks. You know, Alaska Airlines getting Martin Boozer down here, and Westmart Baranoff Hotels putting him up. That's pretty huge. And then Allen Marine Lines and all the other guys that are donating things to help us out. I think we need to give them a shout out for that. And I think what I'd like to tell people is that, yeah, you're going to donate $100 for a ticket, but that's $100 that's going to a charity, and you're getting a lot of fun out of that, and potentially some pretty cool stuff.
That's a good cause.
And it's a great cause.
All right. Thanks so much for coming down. Is there a phone number people can call? What if they want to donate something and can't go on the cruise?
Yeah, you can still do that through the United Way website, or you can call 463-5530. 463-5530. You can go to the United Way website anytime and handle that.
All right. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
I don't know.
Jones Family Singers, they're going to be appearing live in concert this Friday night as the opening night concert at the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival. Tickets are available at jazzandclassics.org. It's 30 minutes past the hour and you are tuned in to listener-supported radio on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest here in the studio to talk about tonight's Juneau World Affairs Council presentation, Cyber War and Warfare, Dr. Lawrence Kusick and Jim Clark from the World Affairs Council. Thank you for coming down the station.
Thank you.
Jimmy, you want to give us an overview of the World Affairs Council?
Well, the Juneau World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that has free events. Tonight, Dr. Husek will be speaking to us about cyber issues that I think are going to be very interesting to people. Again, admission is free, and our mission is to bring people to talk in Juneau about issues of interest in world affairs and interests internationally as well as around the world. So we invite everybody to come tonight and enjoy the event.
Lawrence, can I call Lawrence?
Please.
What is cyber war?
Cyber war is the use of computers and networks to fight international conflicts. It's simply a tactic used in warfare today.
It must go just beyond hacking.
It goes far beyond hacking.
In what ways?
Hacking is a colloquial term meant to denote that a system is being exploited in some way for which it was not designed. And hacking is a neutral term. It's neither all good nor all bad. In fact, we have to apply adjectives to hacking like white hat hackers and black hat hackers to know whether the good or the bad is being done. Cyber war is the militarization of hacking in order to attack systems that are either used by a military or infrastructure systems that may be used by a nation in order to achieve a military objective. So, for instance, a nation state might decide that it's going to attack the military of another nation, as Russia did to Georgia several years ago, or a terrorist may decide to try to disable a communications or a transportation system in order to gain some leverage.
Kind of like an electronic tag machine gun.
Almost, yes. Yes, it's a good analogy.
Can you give me your background, please?
My background is that I was trained as an environmental chemist, and then after working as a chemist for a brief period of time, went to law school and became a registered patent attorney and represented technology companies in the law, and eventually also began to start my own companies. And so I'm a serial entrepreneur as well. I'm working on startup companies numbers 9 and 10 right now. And along the way, also became interested in the issue of terrorism and technology because of a colleague with whom I was teaching at the University of Pennsylvania. And so I am now also the co-director and senior fellow of the Foreign Policy Research Institute in Philadelphia, working on the study of terrorism.
Will terrorism ever really just go away?
I'm afraid not.
We're stuck with it.
Terrorism has always been with us in one form or another. Terrorism is a tactic used by a weaker adversary against a stronger one. And the difference today is that weaker adversaries have access to a far more deadly range of technological achievement than terrorists had, say, 200 years ago, when all they could hope to do was heave a small bomb into a crowd.
What can be done to limit it?
I'm afraid that we'll never be able to eliminate it, but to limit terrorism, one needs good defenses and good offenses that also involve really good intelligence. And good intelligence means that we try to understand what potential terrorists are doing, where they might strike, and we need to both stop them from doing it and also strengthen the defenses in case they do.
Can you give me some of the characteristics of a modern terrorist?
Modern terrorists use high technology against the societies they seek to disrupt. They use networks, they use the internet, they use computers, and they use them not only for attacks, such as we've been discussing, but also for propaganda and for recruitment. And so one of our biggest worries today in the world about terrorism is that the internet is being used to radicalize young people and recruit them into the terrorists' cause.
You live with this stuff day to day. Does it keep you awake at night?
No, I'm afraid it doesn't keep me awake at night, except that occasionally I wake up imagining a new mode of attack that really hasn't been invented yet. And my wife will tell you that keeps her awake at night.
Infonautics. It is one of your business. In fact, you own 5 patents, if not more.
Yes, I'm a holder of 5 U.S. patents that have been issued. And my first venture back in 1989 was a company called Infonautics. It was unique at the time. It would have been a .com, but, of course, in 1989 there was no .com on the Internet. Commercial use of the Internet was illegal. And what my colleagues and I designed was a research system online that responded to regular English questions and gave excellent research answers, all at a price that school students would be able to afford. Because at the time, it cost over $300 an hour to use a search system that wasn't nearly as good as Google is today. And so we collaborated with over 600 publishers to produce a system that was called Homework Helper.
I'm talking with Dr. Lawrence Husick about cyber war and warfare. Other than the obvious, what's the difference between cyber war and warfare?
Well, there really are very few differences between cyber war and warfare. Cyber war is just a tactical use of the computers and networks in warfare in order to gain an advantage. So we can talk about cyber war or cyber terrorism or cyber crime. There are lots of different ways of thinking about it. But we should think about it as a tactic in the same way that we might think about the use of tanks or paratroopers or helicopters. It's one more tool in the arsenal of war fighting.
You're talking tonight, is it 5:30, Jim?
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock in the downstairs at 360 Studios. What's the main thrust of your talk tonight?
The main thrust of my talk is that we should all, citizens, military, government, you name it, all be aware of the vulnerabilities that we face in this cyber world. We should all take responsibility for them. We should all act to correct whatever vulnerabilities exist and to prepare ourselves for what I feel are the inevitable attacks. And so I want people to understand that this is a shared problem and that only by sharing solutions can we overcome it.
It's just so large and gargantuous that I wonder how we can ever control it.
I'm confident that we will come up with ways to control it.
That's what I want to hear.
We have developed systems that are called systems for trusted computing. And these are control systems and computers that not only are trusted, but they're trustworthy so that we can have a good feeling about using them. Unfortunately, we can't buy many of these systems today. We're just in the inception phase of beginning to bring them online. But we need to understand that it's important to do so.
Dr. Lawrence Husick, thank you so much for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I look forward to seeing everyone tonight at 5 o'clock, and I've certainly enjoyed my time here in this wonderful city of Juneau.
Minutes.
Salgado. They're performing at this year's Jazz and Classics Festival. If you need more information about that, go to jazzandclassics.org. In studio with me now are Philip Crowder and Richie Adon, here to talk about Student Dance and Theater's 40th anniversary concert. Thank you very much for coming in.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
How are you doing? No, this is
Richie.
And this is your swan song.
Yes.
Yes.
Our swan song.
We're both leaving Juneau after this concert this weekend. We're going to go back to New York State to live, and we have projects and things to do there when we get there. But this will definitely be our last hurrah here in Juneau.
What's happening in the concert?
In the concert this year, it's, of course, you know, it's our 40th anniversary at JDT. We're going to have some guest choreographers present their pieces. They came and did a workshop earlier in the year. One of them is named Columbina Mosher. She's a modern dance teacher and choreographer from New York City, very well established there. She specializes in the Graham technique and Lamone technique, so maybe some of the listeners are familiar with that. And then she did a wonderful piece. It's very entertaining. And we also have a fellow by the name of Matthew Prescott, who's a Joffrey master teacher. The Joffrey Ballet in New York City has a special program where they promote teachers and choreographers, and so he was one of those master teachers from the Joffrey in New York City, and he came and set a really wonderful contemporary ballet piece. It's kind of a mix of modern and ballet. It's a very, very lovely piece, very entertaining. So we get to see those two pieces performed this weekend. We also have our own in-house modern dance instructor, Brianna Friedenland. She's new there at JDT, teaching modern, and she's got a wonderfully athletic piece that's very entertaining. She's going to have that presented with our dancers. And as far as the ballet goes, this year we're going to have a piece that I call Bach, which is my choreography. It's a point piece for the girls, for the advanced girls. It's neoclassical in the tradition of Balanchine. Very lovely music. And also we're going to have the peasant pas de deux from Giselle. We're going to have one of our boys and two of our girls take turns dancing that. The performances are going to be Friday, May 1st at 7 p.m., Saturday, May 2nd at 7 p.m., Sunday, May 3rd at 2 p.m. at the Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium. Again, that's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. There's two evening shows on Friday and Saturday and one matinee on Sunday. And I think I'll turn this over to Richie so she can tell you about what she's doing in our concert.
Hi, I'm Richie. And the second act is basically, the first one is Agnes DeMille. It's Brigadoon. And one of the shows that I did in London. And I worked with Agnes with it. And I just wanted a little bit of ritual there and how a bride goes before she gets married. And because Juno represents a lot to me, a small town with dreams, and it's a magical place for me. So I thought this would be very appropriate. And then the second one I'm going to do is Michael Kidd's quadrille from Can-Can, Cole Porter's Can-Can, which is a can-can. So it is very athletic, like, you know, Michael Kidd. It's all about acrobatic and ballet combined. So that's a really fun number. And then the last but not least is Sing, 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 Benny Goodman by Bob Fosse. And that is more than anything you would see. And I just want the history there, too.
The big finish, the big finale.
What's the difference between some of these techniques you're talking about, like the Joffrey technique versus the Balanchine school?
Well, it's interesting. This program is really amazingly well-rounded. I mean, we're presenting just about everything that you can see in the dance world. We're presenting classical ballet. We're presenting the neoclassical, which is the Balanchine tradition. The classical ballet is a peasant pas de deux from Giselle. We're doing a contemporary ballet, Matthew Prescott's piece is more what you see nowadays with choreographers, young choreographers experimenting with ballet. We're seeing Columbine Mosher's piece, which is more traditional modern dance that people are used to seeing, the Graham Lamone technique. And of course, we're seeing the Broadway choreography, you know, the tradition of that. So it's going to be an amazing program, what we're going to present. The kids have been working really hard. Our students are dedicated, and they're really going to do a great show. It's going to be very entertaining. It's very eclectic.
How many people are involved?
I think we have about, if I guess if we count the adults that are working with Richie, I would say maybe about 25, I think, is about the number. We have adults. We have people that have worked with her in Chicago that are coming in to do some of the Broadway numbers. And a lot of the ballet modern pieces are just our younger students. They're more like high school age, middle school, high school age.
And also, it will be live music for the Broadway side
of
it. It's going to do the drums, the bass, the usual jazz side of it.
It's going to be Robert Cohen.
And Robert Cohen is the musical director, and it's all live. I wanted it live so that the kids would have an experience of really having collaboration with the musical director and the music and be one with it. It's a whole different dynamic.
I want to go back to one of my earlier questions. How can you look at somebody dancing and say Balanchine?
Well, again, you know, it's a matter of education. I think people who appreciate dance and watch dance over the years, they start to learn the different styles and techniques. You know, it has to be presented to the audience. That's one thing that I tried to do as the artistic director at Juno Dance Theater is educate an audience to all the different styles and syllabuses of the dance world. I've tried to bring that to Juno. I felt that was part of my mission, is to do that. And, of course, you know, I'm here with my partner, Richie, and she was able to bring the Broadway side of it to Juno. And so I think we've succeeded in doing that. And hopefully the audiences who have been coming to see our shows over the years are going to really see the different styles and that they've learned to watch over the years. It's going to be a very, very exciting show. I hope everybody comes to see it.
And when is it happening?
Again, it's happening at Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 7 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, and a 2 p.m. matinee on Sunday. You can get tickets at Hearthside Books or at the Jack, or you can go online at www.jahc.org, or you can get tickets at the door. And for adults, it's $15, and for senior students and youth, it's $10.
Philip Conner and Richie Dunn, it's been a pleasure having you in Juno these number of years.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. We've enjoyed you, too, very much.
Thanks for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No. Again, you know, it's our 40th anniversary. I think that people should come out and support dance. I know there's always a lot of things going on this weekend in May. It was the first weekend of May. There's so many arts activities going on, but I hope people find time to come see one of our shows. Again, you know, there's three shows, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and I can guarantee you'll be very entertained.
Philip, Richie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. How is it that seabirds have no problem drinking seawater? The salt they take in is absorbed and moves through their bloodstream into a pair of salt glands above their eyes. The densely salty fluid that results is excreted from the nostrils and runs down grooves in the bill. Watch a gull at the coast, and you will see drops of this liquid appear on the tip of its bill. As the drop gets larger, the bird shakes its head to send the salt back to the ocean. A seabird's skull has a pair of grooves for the salt glands right over the eyes. These grooves are especially large in penguins, loons, albatrosses, gulls, and puffins, but other marine birds have them too. But don't confuse drinking with bathing. Some coastal birds prefer to bathe in fresh water and will stop at a river mouth or fly inland to a lake to take their daily bath. They seem to relish the fresh water, but they're quite able to drink from the sea. The writers for Bird Note include Bob Sundstrom, Dennis Paulson, Todd Peterson, Francis Wood, Chris Peterson, and Ellen Blackstone. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Support comes from Alaska Canopy, now accepting applications for the 2015 summer season. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
The Second City is coming to Juneau. The renowned sketch comedy and improv troupe that has produced such celebrated performances as Mike Myers, Bill Murray, Rachel Dratch, and many more. Come see the stars of tomorrow, The Second City, Wednesday, April 29th at Centennial Hall. Tickets and information available at the Jack or JAHC.org. This message brought to you by the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council.
It's about 7 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juneau Afternoon here, and listener-supported KTUO and Karen and Juneau. In the studio with Inez, Ariel Valise. She's got a first Friday show for May at the campus. Ariel, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
So do you have a theme for this show?
This show is entitled Flume, and it's all based on the Juneau Flume Walk up on Mount Juneau above Gold Creek. So it's 13 pieces that I've been working on over the past 2.5 years, and I've been walking that flume my whole life, but I've been taking a lot of reference photos, and then I go back to my art studio and I look at anywhere from 3 to 10 photos, and I compile my digital images. So every single one of these art pieces is done digitally this time. There's no underdrawing on paper, for example. I did all my sketches and all my coloring completely in the computer.
Is this a new experience for you?
It is a little bit. I did a lot of it with my City Museum exhibit back in 2012, and I realize it's a much more efficient way to work.
From my memory, the bulk of your material I've seen has been graphic novel kind of stuff.
And this is branching out a little bit. I would describe this as just illustrative work. I played a lot with my color compositions. It's very obviously takes place on the flume. If you're an avid flume walker, you'll recognize all the location spots. But I play with colors, the lightings, the moods. All four seasons are represented, for example. So I think it's a really fun show. It was really, really fun to work on, and I really hope people enjoy looking at it.
Is it a big show? Size-wise?
It's 13 pieces, so I think it's a good collection of work.
How big are each piece?
Each piece is 20 by 15 inches.
And what's your medium?
All of it is digital this time. And so it was all had to be printed out. And it got printed by Commercial Signs and Printing on vinyl on Centreboard.
Why'd you pick that to have it printed on?
Pardon me?
why did you pick that to have it printed on it?
Commercial Signs and Printing has done all my printing for my shows here in Juneau, and it has a nice gloss finish, and it holds all my colors that I use in the computer. So I don't get any fading or any bright flares. All my colors are true to how I painted with them.
Do you have one color that kind of stands out from the other ones?
I really like to represent my flume being bright orange a lot, and I have a lot of really hot pinks that kind of splash in and out of the show. So it's a lot of vibrancy.
What kind of program do you use for your digits?
This is all done in Adobe Photoshop on a Wacom stylus.
Is that a new experience for you?
No, I've been doing Photoshop for a very long time. Probably about 20 years, actually. But the Wacom stylus and the drawing and doing the underdrawing in the computer, that's relatively new in the last few years.
And describe to me what an underdrawing is.
A pencil drawing that I would hand draw on a desk and then scan into the computer and then paint on top of it in the computer software. So this one, it's all 100% in the computer. There's no pencil that hit paper ever.
And it's opening this first Friday at the campus?
Yes. We have an opening reception from 4 to 7, and it will be up the entire month of May. And also I want to note that this show was funded by an individual artist grant that I was awarded by the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council that made it possible for me to do the printing of the show.
Emma Valise, thank you very much. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, I don't think so. Just please come and enjoy.
Weather forecast for tonight, scattered rain showers, patchy fog later on, low temperatures around 39 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, mostly cloudy skies with scattered rain showers, high temperatures around 50 degrees. Friday, numerous rain showers, high temperatures around 50 degrees. Tomorrow in June afternoon, Shona Osterholt will be your host. Kitty Bosler will be here to highlight U.S. commencement activities. We'll talk with members of the Jones Family Singers performing Friday night at the Jack. We'll learn about Sunday's Heavy Equipment Day. We'll talk with Jen Rose about her first Friday show at Alaska Robotics, and Nancy Deturney will be here with Arts Hub. That Writer's Almanac Burnham is Gamora tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon.
Gift Barn Dance of Spring, this Saturday, May 2nd, 7:30 to 11 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish Hall downtown, we'll have live music by a special guest band, Ellie May and the Maybees, led by fiddler Ellie Sharman from Gustavus, with Jackie Farnsworth on piano and Henry Hopkins on tenor banjo. And Odette Edgar will teach and call contra dances. As always, you don't need experience or a partner. Join us for a low-cost, high-fun evening out. Discounts for students and seniors, free for JVs and AmeriCorps. Barn Dance this Saturday night.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM.